Head ups and banana-shaped candy, flipping pages. 2 hours passed before my head finally lifted from the magazine I was reading. I could have stayed like that forever, but a shadow had darkened the glossy pages. I snapped the magazine shut and stared back at a stranger's face. Hello. His smile was lopsided, lazy, but kind. Hello? He looked familiar, yet somehow I knew I'd never met him before. If I had, I would remember. Tall, attractive, with blonde curls, deep-set blue eyes, and a tan that could only be the result of endless days in the sun. He looked to be a little older than me, maybe late 20s, and a whole lot sweet, with life-earned creases around his mouth and eyes. When he smiled, he did so with his entire face, and I found myself smiling too.
Sorry to interrupt, but you snagged the last copy of The Times.
His grin was dimpled, like I knew it would be. I stuttered an apology and handed him the paper, which I'd already read. Sorry.
Never apologize unless it's warranted. Besides, we seem to be sharing the same interests.
He glanced at my desk. Mine's work. I felt the need to explain, as if my usual hobbies consisted of being suspended in the air by nothing but nipple clamps and swimming with sharks.
Mine too, he beamed. Where is work?
LBC.
The coincidences continue, he wiggled his brows.
Hey, Jesus, did you send me someone to get over my obsession with Celia and Laurent?
Girl, I'm not even talking to you after the last few weeks.
Really? I cleared my throat, straightening in my seat. I mean, he could be working for the website 3 floors up, but he seemed like the kind of guy who didn't have an office job. He took the seat in front of mine, leaning forward and thumbing through the magazine I'd just dropped.
Yep, just got back from a stint in Syria yesterday. I'm catching up on things now. And, of course, eating my body weight in Katz's cheesesteak.
I laughed.
That good? You never had it before?
His eyebrows shot to his forehead.
We'll need to rectify that as soon as possible, before you get your New Yorker card suspended.
I'm Jude. I offered him my hand. He took it and kissed the inside of my palm, which was 10 times more intimate than doing it the right way, and the butterflies I thought could only flutter for my boss stirred in my chest, stretching their wings, albeit lazily.
Phoenix Townley.
Just like Jamestown, I started before pulling my head back to examine him thoroughly. So that's why he looked so familiar. His father was the anchor, or Mr. Numbers, for the high ratings he scored every night. Now I was the one beaming, and it felt strange, but good, like someone had unlocked a new setting for my face. I can see the resemblance. I like your dad a lot.
Ditto. Well, most of the time.
He reached for my candy bag without asking and bit a foam banana in half.
Another hour of fine reading and then a trip across town for that cheesesteak?
It was scary, the way I accepted the invitation with little to no additional thought. Jude Humphrey was a calculated girl. She'd been shaped and molded through the heartache of knowing how unpredictable life could be. I wasn't planning on dating anyone anytime soon, especially after the entire Milton fiasco. Part of me didn't even know if I should. If I wasn't going to fall in love, was there really a point in trying? But Phoenix was nice, and he seemed to be easygoing and fun. He would make a good friend. And not only was I single, but the man I pined after was engaged, full-blown about to marry someone else. Not to mention he was into an open, uncommitted relationship, and I wanted more. I needed more. Maybe Phoenix Townley was exactly what the doctor ordered. Maybe he would rise from the ashes of my love life and defy my mother's curse. We read together, then left the library with arms swinging. And even though it didn't feel like he could reach into my chest, grab my heart and pull it from my body, like a certain news director could, I still enjoyed my time with Phoenix. Can I ask you one question? I stopped when we got to the deli. He pretended to weigh that for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Why did you come back? He looked down and pulled up the long sleeve of his shirt, and a tattoo of a girl I didn't recognize smiled back at me from his inner forearm. Time is too precious not to be spent with the people you love most. I learned that the hard way, because of her.
Chapter 7. Celion. Going into Chux's apartment wasn't the most constructive thing to do, considering the little fixation I was developing. I could smell her skin, the undertone of her vanilla scent, and her ginger and jasmine shampoo on every piece of furniture in her tiny apartment. The place screamed at Judith. Her personality jumped out of every corner of the rooms. I saw her in the cider-scented candles lined up neatly on the mantel like soldiers, and in the framed pictures from her graduation, her hugging her father with a huge smile on her face and kissing someone I assumed was Milton, the brainless dick. She was in the curtains that were drawn open, inviting the sun to pour into the room, and in the small, organized stack of newspapers and books on the coffee table, as well as the ring stain of a mug beside them that told me her favorite pastime. And in the unlikely picture hanging above the TV, of a girl reaching up to a heart-shaped balloon, watching it drift skyward and away from her. Snap out of it, she's a hot piece of ass. The world is not running out of pussies. You have a plan, stick to it. Her mother bought that picture, her father told me. It doesn't go with anything around the house, but neither of us has the guts to take it down. He stopped by the picture, staring at it. I grimaced, knowing how it felt to keep everything while you waited for your dead loved one to miraculously reappear. Grief was pathetic. That's why I didn't let myself dwell on it. Don't know if your daughter is not brave enough to do anything, I said with disdain. Her father considered that for a moment. Perhaps guts was not the right word. Jude is just very good at remembering and loving. Robert Humphrey was an impressive man. Strong, silent, and polite, the no-bullshit type. I would be jealous of Judith if it wasn't totally fucked up. Her father was a stand-up guy, and I wondered what kind of person I would be if I'd had someone to look up to. Rob knew his daughter better than I did, so he agreed that keeping our arrangement a secret was in everyone's best interest. Lying to her wasn't ideal, but we both knew that if Judith found out I was helping them by paying her father's way into an experimental treatment program for people with advanced cancer, she would throw a fit, accept the offer nonetheless, then let it eat at her conscience. I'd had Dan find the experimental program because I didn't want Brianna to know anything about Jude she hadn't volunteered herself. Since Robert wasn't doing incredibly bad for someone with stage 3 cancer, he was easily accepted into the trial after a large donation to the clinic. Getting help from me was going to mess with Jude's sense of integrity. She was fiercely independent, and I didn't want this gesture to have the aftertaste of quick fucks and sardonic office whips. Besides, it wasn't solely about Judith. I wasn't a heartless prick. Helping Robert was my way to atone for what had happened to Camille. I'd taken a life. What was the harm in trying to save one? Robert didn't ask me many things that weren't related to the treatment he would be provided. He didn't ask me, for instance, my motivations for helping his daughter in the first place. And so I spared him the story of our first meeting in which an hour after I'd bought her drinks, my tongue was already rimming her crack, while my fingers plunged into her pink, soaking wet pussy. I didn't normally eat ass, but hers was too sweet to pass. At any rate, I did not consider it a compliment worth mentioning to her ill father. We arranged that a cab would pick him up twice a week for the treatment, all expenses paid by me. As far as Jude was concerned, this was an experiment he'd been offered by the insurance company they were now a client of through her employment at LBC, free of charge. It wasn't far-fetched, and this way she wouldn't have to worry about paying me back or think I was expecting something in return. This was not about getting my cock sucked, although, truth be told, based on the way she'd looked at me the evening I hung out with Emily last week, it hardly seemed she'd mind paying in that dubious currency. After we talked shop, Rob and I ended up chatting for another hour. It wasn't like I had a ton of things to do on a Sunday when I wasn't in Florida visiting Maman. It turned out we had a lot in common. We both thought Shake Shack was overrated, that the Rockefeller Christmas tree should be illegal, or alternatively that tourists should be illegal, but one or the other had to go for the sake of the city's citizens' sanity, and that the Yankees were the best thing to ever happen to our NYC. On the subway, making my way back to Manhattan, I sorted through my inbox on my phone. An email popped in from my father, and everybody in the office was CC'd. It was a reminder for an invitation to a gala in the Laurent Towers Hotel next weekend. The original invitations had been sent weeks ago. Of all things, we were celebrating the Me Too movement, raising money to be donated to several women's shelters across the country. LBC had put the spotlight on Me Too, relentlessly chasing stories about sexual assault and gender discrimination, since the movement had exploded. My father prided himself on taking a stand while at the same time taking advantage of his position to coax women into his bed. The list of former and current employees he'd slept with was longer than War and Peace, and just as disturbing. His moving Judith to our floor was a blunt way of trying to get both into her dress and under my skin. I'd blow his cover in a second if it wasn't for the fact that at this point he was recovering from his fourth heart attack, newly divorced, and too tired to fight back. I liked my wars fair and didn't need another death on my conscience. I was waiting for him to quietly step down from his position so I could assume it and cut my ties with him permanently. I RSVP'd to the stupid event and bounced my foot, looking up for a distraction. The woman in front of me, late 20s, good-looking in a corporate wallflower, champagne blonde kind of way, smiled at me from her hardcover Oprah's Book Club novel. I didn't smile back. I wasn't looking for a hookup for hookup's sake. I wasn't a player, whatever the fuck that meant. And unlike some, I didn't treat fucking as a national sport. My one-night stand with Judith had been one of a handful. I usually spaced them out to every other month or so, just enough to keep my sexual appetite and libido sated without having to worry about my dick falling off from an unknown disease. At any rate, I had fucked Jude not too long ago and would be going for round two soon, if it was up to me. The woman tucked her book into her bag, got up from her seat, and walked toward the doors, waiting for them to open. She shot me another look, this time wistful.
"Taken?"
she mouthed. I nodded.
"All the good ones are."
She stepped outside. I should have thought about Lily when I confirmed my status. She did, after all, walk around with a ring that cost considerably more than Judith's apartment, a family heirloom that should have been given to Camille. But all I could think of was the girl who'd yelled at me last week at the bar, then sought me out with her green-brown eyes and wouldn't let go of my goddamn thoughts. Long after I got back to my apartment. And into my shower, where I'd fisted my cock and imagined her smart mouth wrapped around it as I came all over my dirty blonde tiles. The hashtags Charity Gala and Me Too stared back at me from the cream banner as I entered the event, celebrated on the massive rooftop terrace of the Laurent Towers Hotel. Sleek pink and peach carpets, roses spilling from sculptures like rivers, and long tables covered in velvet black tablecloths. No matter how much money my father was going to raise here, it wouldn't cover half of what this evening had cost. I wore a tux and a scowl, Lily trailing alongside me in her gold chiffon dress that managed to have too much fabric yet still exposed the better half of her tits. Not that I cared. I knew Lily was screwing around too. I wasn't a hypocrite, and I was about as possessive of her as I was of the piece of human turd I'd nearly stepped on as I walked into work yesterday morning exiting the train. I didn't want to bring her, but even I recognized that we needed to show some kind of united front. Plus, it was a good opportunity for me to check in on her family, most of whom I actually liked quite a bit. "Your parents okay?" Our arms were locked together, but I stared straight ahead.
"They miss you."
She couldn't even answer a simple yes or no question. "Your sisters?" I ignored her pleading tone. I missed them too, but spending time with them like nothing had happened was impossible.
"Yes, Scarlett and Grace are doing all right."
"And Madeline?" There was a lot of estrogen in her family. Her father was surrounded by three daughters, a mother, and a wife.
"My grandmother is peachy. She really wants you to visit her. Said she'll even make your favorite pie."
"I might," I rasped, meaning it. Madeline Davis was a fucking rock star. The minute Lily and I entered the room, I began to search for Judith with my eyes like a 13-year-old who's just discovered his cock. It wasn't intentional, but primal nonetheless. I wanted to see what she was wearing, how she'd done her makeup, and who she was with. My educated guess was Gary and Ava. She seemed to be spending a lot of time with them, even though she'd formed strong relationships with Kate, Jessica, and Brianna, too. Lily did the annoying thing she tended to do on the rare occasions we were out in public and tugged at my sleeve to make sure I was no more than 3 inches away from her. We were exchanging pleasantries with a bunch of regular guests on the show, a prosecutor, two judges, and a former producer of a competing network. My father ambled toward us, armed with a date who looked fresh out of high school, his laughter sending uncomfortable chills down my spine. She wore an Oscar de la Renta number and beamed like he'd just picked the stars from the skies and rested them in her palm. Cillian, Lily, such a handsome couple. He tapped my back in a fatherly way and proceeded to hug Lily and kiss both her cheeks. She winced in his arms, struggling for a steady breath, and took a step back.
Mr. Laurent?
Please call me Matt. He chuckled, spraying his fake-ass smile around everyone like a skunk's fart. Yes, after all, you do know him rather well. I glanced at my Rolex, then resumed my efforts searching for Jude. I was sure Lily noticed, but couldn't find it in me to care. Her throat bobbed, and she turned crimson next to me. This is Chardonnay. Dad introduced us to his date. I smiled coldly. Hello, how's spring break treating you, Chardonnay?
Cillian.
Lily and Matthias scowled in unison. I'm sorry, that was impolite of me. Spring break is over, right? Finals are probably killing you. Let me guess, you're in cheer? Love Harry Styles? Think 13 Reasons Why is an adaptation of the Bible? There was more sulking and complaining, but everything muted into the background the minute I spotted her among the sea of puffy black and white dresses and big hairdos. Wearing a knee-length powder blue dress and that inconspicuous expression that seemed to speak the secret language of my dick. She looked like Cinderella after a good fuck. Her butterscotch hair twisted up with stray locks ribboning down her neck and cheeks. My mouth had curved with a satisfied smirk at how beautiful and elegant she looked, yet so unassuming, her beauty humble and clean, when my eyes traveled to the person she was talking to. Phoenix Townley. I knew he was back in the States. His time in Syria and Israel had made him tanner, seemingly taller, and more lean and muscular. He carried himself with even more confidence than before. He said he'd come back to spend some time with his family, but as far as I was concerned, it was a great excuse for him to take a part-time job at LBC and spend the rest of the time reminding me I had a hole in my heart the size of his fist. Phoenix wore a blue tux, douchebag, and whatever he said to Judith she found funny because she shoved his chest playfully as if he was misbehaving. Lily was telling me something in the background, but unless it was warning me that the place was on fire, I couldn't have cared less. I knew I had no right to barge into Jude and Phoenix's conversation and make a scene. To show up with my fiancé in tow and claim someone else's time would be an especially douchey move, even by my very low standards. Champagne? One of the servers slid a tray in our direction. Lily took two and handed me one, gluing her side tit to my arm.
I think they make a good couple.
She followed my line of vision. I ignored her, throwing back the champagne like a shot, and walked over to Kate, disposing of the glass on a table on my way. Lily followed me like a hot piss stench at Times Square Station. Kate, who had her back to me, turned around with a smile. I hugged her and her wife, Delilah. Kate's rubicund hair was spiky and her dress seemed extra black somehow. She offered Lily a frosty look which the latter didn't even bother to return.
Me too, huh?
She rolled her eyes. Kate was by far one of the most outspoken feminists I knew. This entire evening was a big fuck you from my father to everyone around him. I crooked an eyebrow. I don't make the rules, I just follow them. For now. We'd spent 10 minutes talking about work with Lily clinging to my arm like the floor would otherwise swallow her whole, when Kate puffed on a celery stick and said,
And where's Matthias, Cillian?
Why would I care where my I started, my eyes already darting to the spot where they'd last seen Jude. And found him talking to her, his hand on her lower back. On her fucking back. You've been warned, Papa, and you have failed. A heavy rock churned inside my stomach, my fists curled beside my body while I sliced through the crowd, galloping toward them without even distinguishing what was going on around me. I wasn't thinking straight, and I was about to yank him away from her by the back of his collar and plant a fist in his face. The only thing that stopped me as I got there was realizing that was exactly what he wanted. Me losing control over a woman who wasn't Lily in order to create a scene. So I joined them, my smile oh so polite as I grabbed the cigar my father was puffing all over her face and nonchalantly dropped it into a half-full glass of champagne. Mind if I butt in? I do, actually. Matthias said, his eyes raking over Lily, who finally stood a few feet away, knowing better than to join us. She stayed the hell away from my father whenever possible after what happened. She knew acknowledging his existence was playing with the kind of fire that could burn down forests, and incinerate our prestigious engagement. Well, life's tough. Better get used to it. How are you doing tonight, Humphrey?
Great.
She gave me a panicky what-the-hell-are-you-doing look, cradling her champagne. Matthias stared at me like he was about to do something he was going to regret, so I entered his personal space with two fluid steps, whispering in his ear, I could blow up your entire party by telling them you shoved your cock in my fiancé's mouth while she was in a very compromising position, filling in as your temporary secretary because you had to fire your old one who'd fucked you long enough to expect more than the average New York salary. But I won't have to do that tonight, will I, Father? You will step back and get the hell away from Judith Humphrey, like I asked you to, because the next time I have to remind you to stay away, I won't be nice, and she won't be annoyed. She'll be scared. For your life. I took a step back and watched the color drain from his face. For a second, I thought he was going to have another heart attack. Then he tipped his head goodbye to Judith and scurried away, looking like a ghost of himself. We both watched him join his date. I knew that if I took my time, Lily would approach us, now that Matthias was gone. He's trying to hit on you. I told Jude, too pissed to look her in the eye without snapping further.
That's his business, not yours,
she said evenly, placing her delicate glass of champagne on a table behind her. The spring air was crisp and chilly, and her whole body blossomed into goosebumps under that dress. Stop playing nice with him.
No, you stop butting into my relationships with other people, Celion. You have no right.
I suppose it wasn't a good time to tell her that Phoenix Townley, who'd wandered out on the terrace mere minutes ago, probably to snort a line, was a douchebag who got sent away to the Middle East after he was caught shooting heroin with a crack whore in his Chelsea apartment. The last and only other time we'd been in this hotel together, Chucks and I were on much friendlier terms. Frankly, I was fed up with this entire bullshit situation where all we did was fight. We were on the same page. Both of our lives were hot messes, and we could make each other forget. I brushed my arm against her shoulder while we people-watched the fancy guests, our colleagues laughing, dancing, and drinking away their long working week.
Inappropriate physical contact? Me too,
she taunted, but the smile on her lips was pure mischief. Miss Humphrey, please utter the entire sentence. I do not want you to touch me, so I'll really have an incentive not to do the things I want to do to you. She said nothing, fingering the thin gold necklace resting against her clavicles. Then she whispered,
Touch me how?
Can't stop this, huh? Neither can I. I smirked. You're not very good at following directions, are you? I refuse to land my ass in hot water even for a good lay.
Hot water with your company or with your date?
She snapped. My date is fake, but my commitment to my network is real. She considered it, chewing on her lip.
It won't get you in trouble.
That won't hold up in court. Say it explicitly, use your words. I want it.
I don't know what it means.
I shook my head, taking a sidestep away from her. She weighed the situation, still playing with her necklace. I caught a glimpse of Kate talking to Lily, and I knew she would never initiate a conversation with Lily in a million years. She'd done it for me. A 46-year-old lesbian who thought white, upper-class men were Satan was my wingman. I think I wanted that on my fucking tombstone. Jude swallowed.
I want you to do it to me, no matter what it means. So what do you want to do to me?
Well, Humphrey, I really want to finger your ass, I said conversationally, smiling to a colleague when he saluted my way and nodding at him courteously as I smoothed my iron dress shirt, while eating your pussy until every drop of your cum is on my tongue. I could see her throat bobbing in my peripheral vision, and damn if it didn't make my cock twitch. I needed to get out of here before it became very apparent that I was talking dirty to my employee while sporting a hard-on that could very well tear through my briefs and tucks, and at this rate perhaps even bend solid steel.
You have a fiancé,
she murmured. A fake fiancé. Don't pretend you don't know that. Our relationship is a joke and we only half bother to hide it. Jude and I were still pretending to talk shop casually when I slipped my hand back to touch hers on the table she had braced herself against. The tip of my little finger curled against hers. I'd forgotten how good she felt, and that infuriated me, because not many things felt good these days.
I don't know,
she said. What do you want me to do? Kiss you in front of all these people? I will. Granted, we'll both get in trouble, but I will.
You wouldn't.
I spun around toward her and pressed a hand against the small of her back, drawing her close. She nearly jumped out of her skin.
Don't!
She said, her voice pitching high. I shoved my hand into my pocket, producing one of two cards I always had on me when I was in the Laurent Towers Hotel. 15th floor, I said. Swipe it on the elevator screen or the door won't open. 10 minutes. We don't need to be here when my father talks about workplace fraternization. I slipped into the crowd and disappeared before Lily could find me, and before I lost my mind.
Chapter 8. Jude. For all the disdain I tried to muster toward Celion, I couldn't stop my legs from carrying me down to the 15th floor. Overeager, reckless, and in serious need of intervention. That's what I was. Besides, he said 10 minutes. I darted straight to the elevator, not even giving it a second thought. Phoenix, who'd given me a ride to the gala but cut his stay short because he was a recovering alcoholic and didn't like to be around booze, was nice, but he didn't make my heart clench and stutter like a lovesick puppy. He was funny and charming, but everything about us felt casual and overfamiliar. His voice felt like feathers on my skin. When Celion talked, it was like he squeezed the back of my neck like a predator. And as much as I hated that Celion was staking his claim on me, Matthias was indeed a level of creepy more fitting behind bars than behind a network president's desk. He'd commented about how pretty I looked tonight, which was fine, but then proceeded to tell me about the champagne suite of the hotel, which was not fine. Of course, I'd refrained from letting him know his son had already shown me around it, managing to defile me in 6 different spots inside said suite. The 15th level was a private floor. In the elevator index, it was described as the art room. When I got to the floor, I swiped the card against the digital screen and watched a green light blink back at me. The door slid open. I stepped out into the room, my heels hitting the marble floor, the breath knocked out of my chest. The vast open room was full of replicas of famous sculptures, life-sized models of The Thinker by Auguste Rodin, The Discus Thrower and Venus de Milo by Alexander Antioch, and the Elgin Marbles. Then, in the center, Michelangelo's David stood staring at me, imperial and almost patronizing, a towering more than 6 feet of sheer maleness, much smaller than the original, but just as striking. My legs shook at the mesmerizing beauty and violence dripping from the sculptures. One thing they all had in common? They were stark naked, unapologetically erotic. The room had no chairs, no couches, nowhere to do anything other than stand and admire the beauty in front of you. I briefly wondered whose idea this room was, but I didn't have to think about it. Not really. I already knew. The man who was as beautiful as a painting, as ruthless as art, as hard as marble. I sauntered across the room, my hand brushing over the broad carved chests and mouths slacking open in pleasure. The room smelled clean, cold, and of chipped stone. It was dimly lit and mostly dark blue. I thought about Dad, about the experimental treatment our new insurance company had offered him this week, about the hope in his eyes when he'd broken the news to me, and the faith in my heart, its seed blooming into something I was afraid was going to grow beyond my control. Everything was moving too fast, and yet not fast enough since I'd joined LBC. I'm scared. I crouched down and stared at a marble woman sitting in a bath, fingering herself. She wouldn't spill my secret to anyone's ears. She would listen. Maybe she would even understand. Her face was defiant, fearless. She wasn't ashamed of what she was doing. My life is in shambles, and my father is dying. All the things I want seem unachievable, so far away. Is your heart lonely, too? I whispered, caressing her cheek. I can't fall in love. This is lust and confusion. This is what happens when you're about to lose a parent and gain a dubious lover. I'd come to this room to be with Celion, but Celion wasn't mine to be with. If I told the Jude of 3 months ago what I was about to do, she would punch me in the tit, because an engagement was an engagement. The word's definition meant he was committed to someone else. Then I remembered the way he'd looked at her up at the gala, like she'd killed his dreams. And the way she'd clung to him, like she knew and didn't care. "Yes," a dark masculine voice whispered behind me, and I twisted around to take him in. Celion stood at the elevator's door, a shoulder leaning against the frame, playing with the electronic card between his fingers.
"That's why we do what we do. Why we can't stop this."
He took confident steps into the room, each of them making my heart swell a little more, until there was a monster in my chest, hungry for his touch. The look on his face alone engorged my clit. I squeezed my thighs together, my underwear damp between them. Whose idea was this room?
Mine.
Why?
Because I like beautiful, lifeless things.
His finger hovered over my face, making minimal contact with a lock of my hair and moving it behind my ear.
They can't talk back. They can't screw you over. They can't fuck your future.
Is this where you take all your one-night stands? His slight smirk made my chest hurt.
If you were a one-night stand, you wouldn't be standing here. And no, I don't make a habit of fucking women against these replicas. They're worth over 300K apiece and hard to come by. Pick a favorite, he ordered, not asked, gesturing to the vast room.
I resumed my stroll among the marble statues, feeling his eyes burning a hole in my back. Seeing through my dress and skin and bones, devouring me from the inside. I studied every sculpture carefully, like there was a wrong and right answer, before finally gesturing at David. I turned around to face Celion. He tisked, running his calloused fingers over his jawline.
You can do better.
What's more beautiful than Michelangelo's David? I challenged.
Not many things, which makes it very cliché. The first nude statue made in the Renaissance and the one sculpture every Egypt knows. The Beatles aren't your favorite band, right, Jude?
No, I scoffed. Too mainstream. Actually, I licked my lips, snorting out a laugh. It was a ridiculous thing to say, but I didn't mind showing Celion my weirdness. For all the bad things he was, he never judged me. I always thought David's penis was disproportionately small. And, soft. Yep, that just came out of my mouth.
The original one is attached to a 17-foot-tall sculpture. Pretty sure you still couldn't fit it in your smart mouth. Think harder, Humphrey.
I resumed my walk around the room. He was right. I needed to push myself harder, to pay attention and not just go with the flow. Wasn't that what a good news person did? I stopped at a statue of a man sitting on a throne made of a beast standing on all fours. He was naked, sheathed by a toga over his privates, staring up to the sky. He looked like a gladiator, wounded and taut and muscled. I didn't know this piece, but it spoke to me. He was obviously in pain, yet his face was fierce with defiance. He was completely unknown to me, yet his battle so familiar.
The warrior.
Celion spoke into my ear, and I shuddered with pleasure. I felt his body close to mine, yet he didn't touch me.
By an anonymous artist. Special shipment from Italy. A spur-of-the-moment purchase, but I liked the pain in his eyes. So very intimate, don't you think?
Of course I did. Happiness was something you were eager to share. It was pain you wanted to keep private. Why did I have to choose? I asked, still staring at the statue.
There's a camera in the right-hand corner of this room, just behind my back. I could take you to the presidential suite and fuck you to oblivion and back, but I'd much rather do it somewhere I can send the message home to Matthias.
And the message is, I turned around to face him.
That you're mine?
Yours I am not. That was a lie I wished I could believe, about a man I wished I could forget. My body responded to him in a way I'd never experienced before. I belonged to him, and he belonged to someone else. What did that make me? The circumstances were pure semantics, sins wrapped in sugar so I could swallow them more easily. Celion cupped my cheek. Yes, he whispered. You are. You're so far gone, you can't even see me sharing a drink with my cousin without losing your shit. You're someone else's, I said. He shook his head. No one's. And Lily? Haven't touched her in over a year. His words cut the rope of anxiety wrapped around my throat, and I felt like I could breathe again. Not going to, either. I have no plans of fucking anyone but you. But I would stay away from Lily even if she was the last proud owner of a pussy on planet Earth. I don't do cheaters, and she is one.
Oh?
With my father. He paused, studying my reaction, and I tried hard not to throw up in my mouth. Shortly after, his jaw snapped shut as if he was swallowing down nausea himself. Never mind. Point is, this is not for you to worry about. She knows it, too. He explained, his calm and poise returning. I licked my lips, staring at his. A few months ago, the girl who'd been with Milton would have told him she wanted everything, that she deserved it, too, and screw the empire he was trying to build on lies and revenge. But right now, standing in front of him, trying to make it in this cruel, real world, chase debt, and look after my father, something was better than nothing, especially something that came from him. We were both drowning, and when we were together, it felt like I was coming up for air. And she knows you're not faithful, I stressed.
There's nothing to be faithful to. It's not a relationship. We live apart, we sleep apart, we live our lives apart.
I'm not an exhibitionist. My eyes traveled to the red-dotted camera above our heads. He advanced toward me, cupping my cheek and brushing his lips against mine erotically. My stomach twisted and dropped like I was falling.
Neither am I.
He pulled my lower lip between his straight teeth, tugging hard before releasing it slowly, prolonging the sweet, delicious pain.
But I'm willing to make an exception to make sure the message hits home. Wrap your arms around the warrior's neck.
I blinked at him, disoriented. But I did as I was told, first lowering myself to sit on the warrior's lap. I felt the statue's stone chest behind me as I carefully clasped my arms around his neck. From this position, it looked like he was gazing down at my rack. Celion lowered himself to his knees and drank my little moan of excitement hungrily with another kiss, this time tonguing my mouth. Fighting his way through the walls of it and claiming every growl and moan that sat there dormant, waiting for him to unleash it.
I'm going to wreck you,
he hissed, shoving his palm into my sweetheart neckline and cupping one of my tits. He took the nipple out and sucked it savagely before moving away and blowing cold air on it. I arched against the warrior, feeling his cold marble toga digging into my butt. It was hotter than sin. But Jesus, it was weird. Jesus. Dot, dot, dot. Celion's hand found the zipper behind my back and began to roll it down, his eyes hard on mine. I whimpered at how commanding he looked when he did that. Because my dress was strapless, the minute I arched my back, it slid down and pooled at my feet like a pale winter lake, with little to no effort from him. I was completely naked, save for my soaked white cotton panties and my chucks. He lowered himself to my nipples and began kissing and biting them, keeping me sandwiched between him and the statue and drinking his attention thirstily. Every time I tried to touch him, he plastered my hands back to the statue. I was put on a pedestal to be seen and admired by his father. To be devoured by Celion. Only him. Only ever him. I tried to rub myself against him, but that resulted in him moving away. He continued to tongue me all the way down to my stomach, screwing his tongue into my navel and groaning, his nose paving its way down to my panties. He used his teeth to lower my underwear to my knees and stared at me for a few seconds, burying his nose in my slit and taking a lungful of air, breathing it in. I nearly burst out of my skin, every nerve in my body dancing to the rhythm of his heartbeat.
This pussy is mine, no less than it is yours.
He kissed the slit, flicking his tongue over it, and teasing my clit.
Spread them wide, Chucks.
Chucks. I didn't have to be asked twice. I threw one leg over each of the statue's thighs, spreading myself so wide my inner thighs burned. Celion licked me crack to slit before plunging deeper. Every once in a while, he brushed his thumb or forefinger against my leaking center and pressed it between my butt cheeks, wetting the area. I'd never done so with anyone else, but there was something about Celion that made me want to be a little submissive. In the newsroom, we were at war, but in private, our main battle was trying to keep our clothes on. He teased my backside with his fingers, playing, poking, flirting while eating me out, and I exploded from within like fireworks, moaning his name so loud my ears rang. I let go of the warrior's neck, sliding down to the floor, my thighs still shaking from the climax ripping through me. Celion straddled me at the sculpture's feet, still fully clothed, and unzipped his dress pants.
"I'll ask again," he growled. "Are you on the pill?"
"I am," I whimpered, clawing at his suit as an excuse to touch him and opening my legs as far as I could with him pinning me to the floor.
"Good, because I want to fuck your pussy and then come inside your mouth, and this time you won't be swallowing it. You'll be tasting and enjoying every second of it until I've had enough. Understood?"
I nodded. His first bareback thrust into me made my eyes roll in their sockets. He was so hard, his cock so velvety and hot, I thought I was going to die from the intense pleasure. I dripped against his cock and on the granite floor, and the more I moaned, the more intense his movements became. Rougher, deeper, faster, like he was punishing me for wanting to screw me so badly. I think we were both alarmed by the strength of our attraction to one another. I wanted to keep my job at all costs, and he didn't need the complication of anyone finding out, not to mention tying himself to an affair while he was engaged. Was that what we had now? An affair? I knew if I started labeling it, I would fall off the orgasmic cloud I was riding. He throbbed inside me, hitting my G-spot again and again and again, his hand snaking out toward my ass and now fully toying with it, in, out, in, out.
Breaking you in slowly for next time.
He kissed the side of my face almost romantically, and I nearly laughed. How do you know I haven't done that before? He somehow managed to throw me a patronizing look, even mid-sex, thrusting into me so punishingly now that I grazed his butt with my fingernails, tears of pleasure pooling in the corners of my eyes. A few more plunges, and the orgasm climbed up from my toes to the rest of my body like an earthquake. I screamed, this time enjoying a slow, sensational feeling of warm honey coating my entire body as the climax washed through me.
"Close," he panted, picking up his speed.
A minute later, he pulled out of me and shoved his dick into my mouth, making me taste myself in a way I never had before. I was sweet and musky. Not bad, but too familiar. His warm, thick cum came in spurts inside my mouth, and my eyes fluttered shut with pleasure again.
"Taste me this time," he ordered.
I did. I let his cum sit on my tongue, tasting its earthy, salty tang. I smiled, my mouth full of him. He smiled back, and he was so heartbreakingly beautiful. For a short moment, it occurred to me I might never recover from this guy, no matter what my mom had told me.
"Now swallow."
I did.
"Open your mouth," he ordered.
I did that too, feeling oddly comfortable with being bossed around.
"Atta girl."
We put our clothes on silently. A part of me was still delirious at what we'd done together, and another part wanted to throttle myself for letting him do this to me when he had a fiancée upstairs. And the tape. God, had I actually allowed him to record everything? How stupid was I? Very stupid when it came to his penis, apparently. "Celion?" I asked as I retied my chucks. Swan white, this time. He turned around and pinned me with his gaze. "No one can know about this," I pointed at the camera. He nodded.
"We'll go down to the second floor and destroy it so you can sleep tonight."
Confusion must have colored my face, because he pressed his knuckles to his lips, stifling one of the dazzling smiles he refused to share with the world. You're not usually agreeable, I noted, as we walked toward the elevator, our steps and voices echoing around the mostly empty room.
Neither are you. That's why I wanted to see how far you'd go for this. Turns out, he grabbed my waist and yanked me under the crook of his arm. You'd go pretty far to be fucked by me. I will tell my father that if he messes with you again, he is in for hell on earth. But I would never let anyone see your tits and cunt.
This is going to end badly, I murmured, not even sure if he could hear me. We slid into the elevator, and he pushed the second floor button, smirking.
But we will have one hell of a ride.
Celion. I'd never believed in miracles. My experience with life had been that it was pragmatic, uncontrollable, and unpredictable. With a royal introduction to all three when I'd caught my father with our maid's mouth wrapped around his dick when I was only 5 years old. He'd told me they were playing, and I'd believed him. Moreover, it looked like a pretty fun game, too. I loved touching my penis, loved being tickled, and combining the two seemed like the kind of idea to land you a Nobel Prize. So, of course, I ran it by Maman. Needless to say, Maman was not impressed with the way my father conducted his spontaneous playdates with the help. The maid was fired, my parents had a huge fight, and from that point forward, I can't remember a time when we were a happy family. Or just happy. Or just a family. For all the shit both of them had been through together, for all the affairs and infidelities and fighting through lawyers and stooping so low, they made me wonder just how bad exactly humans could be. They hadn't gotten a divorce until last year. My father, however, had never loved me. His disdain was fundamentally present in the way he looked at me, the way he sneered, and the way he deliberately avoided anything I liked or that mattered to me. He thought, in some fucked up way, that I was responsible for the slow and unstoppable breakdown of his marriage, which only went to show how little responsibility he took when it came to his problems. That's why I had very little faith in this thing called life. If something went right, it was probably because it was taking a turn on its way to go seriously wrong. Give it time and it would happen. Life was about putting out fires, or if you worked in a newsroom, about starting them. Which worked well for me. My personal experience with people was lackluster. So I didn't mind screwing them over if they did something bad that deserved to be publicly discussed. Anyway, like I said, I'd never believed in miracles, and that's why I knew there was a reason Lily had left the gala before Jude and I got back to the terrace. Unfortunately, for all parties involved, I didn't have it in me to care enough to check. Lily was part of my plan, sure, but my plan was already in motion. I would deal with her little tantrum later, remind her about my parents' chateau in Nice, the one she wanted to renovate and live in during the summer so badly. I'd buy her another ticket to the Maldives to vacation with her friends, soothe her the way she was used to being soothed, with pretty shiny things and negative attention.
Oh my God, Celia!
After all, not long ago I'd caught my fiancé on all fours, taking my father's cock in her mouth in his office while he caressed her bare, fake-tanned ass, much like the maid had all those years ago. It hadn't been coincidental, and I knew it. My father was a sick prick, and he'd figured I'd remembered the day he'd buried his family 6 feet under, not only by cheating on my mother, but also by deciding it was my fault for ratting him out. He made me feel like I was fundamentally defective. So I became what he treated me as, a world-class jerk. Why would I not be here? I work here. I'd clucked my tongue, ignoring the entire scene playing before me with pure nonchalance, like my father had been sitting at his desk and Lily was typing away on her desktop as a part of that bullshit internship she'd wanted to take for half a second to impress me and prove she was worthy of inheriting Newsflash Corp. I'd walked into his office with purpose. He'd invited me there. So he knew I'd catch him, and of course I couldn't give him the pleasure of seeing me hurt, so I poured myself a glass of scotch. I took a seat across the room on a brown leather settee and sipped quietly, watching the view from his window. Lily had finally had the audacity to tuck her shirt into her skirt, roll the ladder down her bare thighs, and wipe her lips, running like a headless chicken across the room. She'd reached out, about to throw herself at me. Get anywhere near me and your life, reputation, and social circle as you know them will cease to exist. I'd sipped my drink, crossing my legs. She'd halted in place, collapsing onto the carpeted floor. My father had chuckled, taking his time to zip himself up. I remembered thinking no son should ever see his father's penis at that age, unless it was because he needed to give him a bath because he was too sick to do it himself. "Son," he'd finally greeted. I'd smiled, thinking, not anymore, and maybe not ever.
Cela aurait dû être toi sous ses buses, non ta sœur,
he'd said. It should have been you under that bus, not your sister. But his tone had been kind, apologetic, like he'd been pleading Lily's case. Bastard. I'd answered him in French. You know, Papa, I wish that too every single day. And I know why you do, because the minute I get the chance, I'll ruin you completely. After Jude and I reached the second floor and destroyed the video, we went back to the terrace, shared another drink with our colleagues, blissfully ignoring each other. Another thing about her that made my dick happy. She wasn't clingy or needy or even particularly interested in claiming me or my attention. She did her own thing. Like me, she simply had needs that needed to be met. Call me a saint, but I was happy to take one or six for the team. When it was time to go home, most people shared an Uber, others opted to walk, and many just cabbed it and saved the receipts for expense purposes. I didn't want Jude to take the subway back home this late, but I didn't want to offer her a ride either. It wasn't worth the aftermath of endless gossip and possible false assumptions on her end. I barely looked my staff in the face, let alone offered them a ride. This led me to resort to asking a rather pathetic favor of Kate, who, for an unknown reason, had decided to get here in a car.
First things first, thanks for the pussy breath.
She took a pull of her beer and a step away from me. Figured you'd appreciate it. I deadpanned, unblinking. You need to give Judith a ride.
We live in NoHo, she lives in Brooklyn,
she stated matter-of-factly, as if logic had any place in my decision. I couldn't care less if she lived on the moon, and the way I unclasped her fingers from her drink, downed it, and discarded it in the trash communicated that perfectly to her. Kate shook her head, poking my chest.
Fine, but you should really dump the lollipop in a wig.
The lollipop in a wig has a pedigree and a 10% share of my company. Besides, Lily was hardly a factor. Even if I were officially single, I still wouldn't openly court an employee. Not that I wanted to court Judith.
Funny I didn't peg you for a man who'd allow someone to have him by the balls.
I wouldn't allow Lily to suck them, let alone hold them, I quipped. My tolerating her is strictly business.
Then you're a very bad businessman, because she has leverage over you.
Shooing Kate away with a wave, I got back to entertaining my investors and colleagues, but not before ordering her to never mention her favor for me to Jude. The feisty little foo didn't do weakness or vulnerability, which made breaking her in bed so much more fun. A few minutes later, I watched them make their way to the exit and tossed my head back, knocking down another drink. I realized I hadn't thought of Camille the entire evening. A sharp pain sliced through my gut and I let it bleed agony because I deserved it, because I was a bastard and everyone knew it. Camille, Maman, Matthias, Lily, Jude, Kate, and anyone who'd ever worked with me. The warrior knew that. Our juices still smeared on his gladiator boot. Even the silent walls of the art room knew, and the security tape we'd stomped on and hidden in the bottom of the security room's trash.
Chapter 9. Jude. I was bouncing on the balls of my feet, staring at Celion's locked office door. Happiness tasted weird in my mouth, not unpleasant, but surprising all the same. I was so used to worrying, I'd forgotten how it felt to simply be. But this morning had started off with Dad dashing out to his experimental treatment, grabbing the bag with the lunch and snacks I'd made for him. "Forever the warrior, just like your mom," he'd said as he kissed the crown of my head, on his way to the cab waiting for him downstairs. I'd asked him 1,000 times if he was sure they paid for the transportation, and he'd said yes. It made no sense, but I let it slide. It had filled my heart with hope, even before I got the text message from Phoenix. My new straight male BFF said he couldn't follow up on the lead he'd mentioned to me because he was having a father-son retreat with his dad. I thought it must be weird to have James Townley as your dad, but that was all Phoenix knew. He left me the details he'd received and asked me to go for it and let him know how it went. Celion arrived at his office at 9 o'clock sharp, wearing a navy two-piece wool suit and the usual get-the-fuck-out-of-my-face expression. I had started to get used to his air. Dare I say it made my lady parts tingle and fist-bump one another? I squeaked internally when he arrived. He pushed a hand into his pocket and produced his key, unlocking his door.
"Can I help you?"
he asked dryly. "I've been waiting for you." I clapped my hands together. The first rundown meeting for the show was usually at 10 o'clock. I couldn't wait an entire hour to tell him about the lead I'd just confirmed on the phone, and Kate and Jessica were still out of the office. He pushed his door open, his face blank. I followed him in, plopping on the seat in front of him. I opened Kipling, my notebook.
"I can't fuck you here,"
he said, tossing his phone on his desk and taking off his blazer. My head snapped up and my mouth slacked. He threw 2 mint gums into his mouth and took a sip of his coffee, going through his morning routine.
"But if you want to get dicked tonight, you can come over after work. Separately, of course."
I nodded, pretending to consider it. I did want to have sex with Celion again. We were as good in the bedroom as we were bad for each other out of it. But for him to assume that's the reason I was there was downright ridiculous. "Tell you what, I'll tell you why I'm really here, you'll apologize for being an ass, and we can both move on with our lives. Deal?" He sat down.
"Okay, little grasshopper. Let's see what you've got."
I rolled my eyes and pushed my notepad his way, speaking fast. "Phoenix texted me early this morning. He has a huge lead but doesn't have time to chase it. It's about..."
"Stop hanging out with Phoenix,"
he cut into my words. I clamped my mouth shut, frowning. "What? Excuse me?"
"You're excused because you didn't know what kind of a douchebag he is. But now that you're fully informed, drop him. He's bad news."
"And you're good news?" I huffed.
"I'm the best fucking news. Have been for 2 consecutive years, and I have the numbers to back it up."
Okay, well, I did kind of step into that one. I shook my head. "You can't tell me what to do, and you're wasting time right now talking about Phoenix when we have a huge headline to chase," I seethed, snapping my fingers in front of his rather amused face. He pursed his lips into a ruthless smirk.
"Go on."
"The president of Trust State, Arnie Hammond, is going to announce that he's stepping down from his position this evening." I snatched Kipling back from him, flipping through it urgently as I spoke. Trust State was one of the biggest insurance companies in the country. "Not many people know about it yet, and it's only a speculation. However, it is happening, and the reason is rather scandalous. Remember how Trust State filed a huge lawsuit against Germany 30 years ago?
They represented Holocaust survivors who weren't eligible for compensation, and their families."
Celion nodded, finally focusing on what mattered.
"It was a huge deal, gained a lot of publicity and new clients after that."
"Well, apparently, Hammond pocketed a lot of that money, and an internal investigation just blew that case to the sky." I licked my lips, feeling every cell in my body dancing in excitement. "I contacted the source Phoenix gave me. He's high up in the Trust State food chain. I'm going to meet him this afternoon."
"Is he going on the record?"
Celion's eyebrows jumped to his hairline. Yeah, but he wants to remain anonymous." Celion frowned.
"Fuck that. A faceless source is like a cuntless whore."
"Thanks for the analogy, and that's not going to happen. He'll lose his job."
"Not necessarily." "I'm coming with you," Celion said.
"No, thank you."
"It wasn't an offer, Judith. You're good, but still learning. I'm a veteran, and this is not about stroking your precious little ego. This is about scoring the best story we can get and giving it to our viewers before everyone else. There's no I in team."
"There isn't Tim," I grumbled, though I knew he was right. He smirked.
"Annoyingly adorable. Almost tempted to let you suck my cock right here in the office."
I rolled my eyes, stood up, gathered my things, and exited.
"And delicious," he called to my back.
I didn't turn around, but I did stop at the door and smile to myself, thinking rather sadly, "And screwed." My source, Finn Sampson, was late. We were sitting at a kosher deli on a side road slicing Canal Street. The scent of mothballs and stale bread floated around the room. Celian had ordered a coffee and a bullet because he couldn't stand